Hello, you're listening to Andrew Horn's Rock Revival. I'm Andrew Horn, and this is my Rock Revival. This is a show where I talk about rock and metal albums from across the generations. Some of them obscure, some of them really famous, some you may have not heard before, some you probably have. On this episode, I'm going to talk about a particularly special album, and it's not just special to me, it's an album that is special to a heck of a lot of people around the world. It's the first time on the show that I'm going to be talking about something from one of my main heroes musically, Devin Townsend. Now, a lot of you will be familiar with Devin's work, and this album I'm going to talk about tonight, Ocean Machine by Omek. It's something that literally changed my life when I heard it. So this album, Ocean Machine by Omek, it is held in extremely high regard. And even now, listening to it so many years after it came out, it's very easy to get lost in it all over again. It's an album that took me greatly by surprise when I first heard it. I was familiar with a lot of the things that Devin had done before that, such as being the vocalist for Steve Vai's band on the Vai album Sex and Religion, or then joining the Wild Hearts for a while, and of course, Strapping Young Lad, the industrial metal masters that were Strapping Young Lad. The first SYL album still holds up today. Hey, the second one still holds up today. After that, with the self-titled album and Alien and so on, I didn't really grab me as much, but the first two are glorious. But anyway, we're talking about Ocean Machine on this album, on this episode. Released in July 1997, originally just under the name Ocean Machine as the band name, and then the title was Biomech. It was re-released pretty soon afterwards under the name Devin Townsend, Ocean Machine, Biomech. Because Devin had just become a lot more popular and a lot more famous once this had come out. If you're not familiar with Devin Townsend, oh please, please do listen to some of the stuff he's done. I do wholeheartedly recommend Ocean Machine. It is a life-changing, monumental thing. To me, this is my, I don't know, this is my dark side of the moon. Ocean Machine is really that important to me, personally. And the people that love this album, it's something that has stuck with them ever since it came out back in 97. So while some of the material for the Ocean Machine album had been around since Devin's time touring with Steve Vai, you don't really feel like the album comes from different eras at all. It holds together really well as an overall piece. It is something where, while it does have very distinct tracks to it, it is something that feels like, I don't know how to really put it, it feels like an opera, like a classical suite. It is a piece unto itself, and while it is 73 minutes long, just shy of 74 minutes long in total, you'd never get bored with it. You are taken on a very special journey, which is amazing considering the difficulties that Devin had putting it together. Researching for this episode, I was reminded that he had trouble recording the drums due to torrential rain in the studio in Spain. So he ended up sampling the one of the drum hits from Sad But True by Metallica. So if you listen closely to the snare drum on the Ocean Machine album, you do actually hear a tiny bit of Kirk Hammett and James Hetfield playing guitar as well, but only very slight. I didn't know that until many years after loving the album. So I've had a bit of a complicated history with this album. It has been with me through thick and thin. I bought it from Noise and Noise, which was a record store back in Sheffield that specialised in rock and metal and punk and goth and industrial and all these stuff that the mainstream was ignoring, basically, at the time. Run by some very cool people. I remember picking it up there after I'd gone in on a lunch break from my Saturday job and heard Regulator, which is, it's heavy, but it's strangely melodic. It's track 9 on the Ocean Machine album, and like everything on the album, it packs a real punch, but also drowns you in this sea of melody. And yes, that is another ocean analogy. I'm sorry about that. I do apologise. But the mix of like progressive metal, really chunky progressive metal, hard rock, alternative rock, ambient music. There's so much stuff going on here. It's kind of hard to describe it, but I'm going to try as I go through this episode. So behind the beautiful blue artwork, absolutely gorgeous cover artwork, you are treated to the album itself. This is an album that Devin actually put out on his own. He did struggle to get the album picked up by a label, and that's when he founded the famous Heavy Devi Records. I mean, why not? It's a great thing to do. If you can't get someone else to put this stuff out, do it yourself. Get your message out there. Get your material out there. It's certainly worked out for Devin. So the album opens with Devin reading lines from a poem that I believe he'd written when he was a child. I may be mistaken on that, but it is from a poem that Devin wrote. The first track, Seventh Wave. You are lulled into a false sense of security with the quietness and the gentle tone of Devin's voice, which then leads into an enormous riff. I hate to use cliches from back in my journalism days, but it is a proper sledgehammer riff as it comes in. But you immediately notice it's not just heavy, it's also hypnotic. There's a cyclic nature to the riff that goes round and round and round and undulates, again evoking waves moving. And as it moves on, it moves into different rhythms, different tempos, leading up to the enormous chorus, which just, it stopped me in my tracks, figuratively. I remember I was still a teenager when I got this. It was not long before my 19th birthday, and I remember getting this and laying on my bed in my teenage bedroom and just being absolutely swallowed in it. The production on it is huge. It's absolutely enormous, and the lush nature of Devin's vocals, the lush nature of his guitar playing, the musicianship of the rhythm section on the album, it is stunning. And I can't praise it enough. I cannot praise this album enough. It is just so, so good. And as I say, it is my Dark Side of the Moon. So after Seventh Wave, there's a little bit more melodic song called Life, which has a more upbeat, up-tempo feel to the introduction and the verse, leading into a chorus that has Devin's vocals tumbling in from all angles. It's just a wonderful, wonderful song. Takes you by surprise. And that's the nature of a lot of things by Devin. He takes you to places that you don't expect to go, and that is a wonderful thing, and it's a wonderful testament to his artistry. Okay, Life is followed by Night and Hide Nowhere, which again have this strange otherworldly feel to them. They're heavier songs, but they have this otherworldly vibe, especially Hide Nowhere, which kind of, it does feel like, still, it has the feel of the ocean to it, but it could be an ocean on another world, maybe Venus or something like that, something in the other side of the solar system. This is followed by Sister, quieter song, quieter track, no less powerful. Again, showing off the lush, multi-layered production of this album and in all of its glory. It's really something to be savoured. Sonically, it's second to none in my opinion. This album is just something extremely special. That's followed by 3 AM, which is a little bit of a stranger track, leading into track 7, Voices in the Fan, which really took me by surprise at the time. I wasn't thinking it would affect me quite as much, because at the time I was into the heavier area of Devin's music, and indeed the heavier music in general. But Voices in the Fan has a very strange pop. It's not even pop. How to describe it? It's kind of progressive rock pop. Devin, you know, you make this really hard to describe. It's really tough to describe your music, and I love that. I love that about this stuff. But Voices in the Fan, it has some harsh vocals in it, over sort of a poppy background. It's just very, it took me by surprise, greatly, and I really appreciate that. And that's followed by Greetings, which, again, it feels like a segue track, it feels more like a segue track rather than a song in itself, to these ears anyway. That's how it's always felt, because it leads into Regulator, the first track I heard from the album when I was visiting Noise and Noise. I remember just my ears pricking up and me saying to the girl on the counter, is this a new different Townsend? Is this Ocean Machine? And she's like, nodding. She said, yeah, it's good, isn't it? And I was like, oh, I need this. I need this straight away. Where is the cop? I get it now. So I bought it straight away, rushed home, and listened to the whole thing. Regular Issues followed by a couple of chunky tracks in the form of Funeral and Bastard. And those two take a total of 18 minutes together, back to back. And they are just unique. It's really hard to describe this. They cover all the things that have been covered in the album already. The heavy riffs, the rhythmic, hypnotic backbone of the whole thing. Drums and bass are produced beautifully, especially considering that the snare drum is a sample of Metallica. You know, Lars, you've done a good job on this one. But it is just breathtaking. In this heavy cacophony, this wall of sound, there is abject beauty absolutely leaking from every note, and it's just glorious. Now, after the 1-2 punch of Funeral and the two-part Bastard song is The Death of Music. Now, this is a track that Devin had had in mind for quite a long time, and it is presented here on Ocean Machine as a 12-minute long ambient piece. And that, I had a strange experience with this because I'd come home from my Saturday job. I was tired. I'd listened through the album. I'd been relaxed by it through the album and absolutely fallen in love with it. But when I got to The Death of Music, I was sort of between wakefulness and sleep. I was really tired. And this isn't a short album. You know, it's not like short pop punk or something like that. This is serious, wonderful art. And by the time it got to The Death of Music, I was entering this sort of strange dream state. And the album did it with me. The Death of Music is 12 minutes of odd, surreal, strange, and utterly beautiful ambient music. So with snatches of voices, sound effects, distant sound effects, distant instrumentation, and then there are moments of melody in there rising to a chorus. However, the main structure of that song is presented behind this wall of ambient music, so you only kind of half hear it, but I heard it in the most wonderful way in this odd dream state, and I'll never forget that. And it just cemented the whole thing in my head as being this glorious, glorious thing. I know it sounds a bit weird. I was half asleep and it had an effect on me, but that's what it was like. It went hand in hand. It was like a mindfulness tape, a self-help tape. It was like hypnosis and yoga and mindfulness and just beauty rolled into one thing. And Devin did an incredible job on this with the other people that were involved. There's J.R. Harder on bass, Mike Chapman on drums, Chris Villaggio on backing vocals, John Morgan on keyboards, and various people involved with the engineering and recording of it. So he had to actually copy the master tape he had to sneak into the studio at 3 a.m. and copy the master tape because the original producer guy, refused to let it go. It was just crazy to think that something so beautiful came out of such stressful circumstances. That did also mean that a song got left behind. Ocean Machines itself was only in demo form, but the rest of it was rescued and put together into this, which is just so good. Out of such difficult circumstances and a strange period in Devin's life, something so utterly beautiful, some at times heartbreakingly beautiful. It's just an incredible thing to think of and think about. So once The Death of Music had lulled me into this beautiful dream state that I hadn't expected and was just completely along with, there was no escape from it, comes the track Thing Beyond Things, which I believe was listed on the back as a bonus track. I'm not entirely sure. I can't remember off the top of my head because my copy of Ocean Machine is signed and framed. So I can't really look at the back. I will get to that in a little while. But Thing Beyond Things is clean guitars, beautiful soft vocals. Devin really showing what his voice is capable of, as he has done throughout the album, but the softer moments of Devin's performance are just exquisite and heartfelt and wonderful. His use of his control of his breathing is amazing. The tone of his voice is just, it can be up there with the harshest scream or the deepest growl. But yeah, in Thing Beyond Things, it's so wonderful. It's like fresh air, again, across the top of waves. I'm getting very philosophical on this one, but this is Ocean Machine. This is something that it's worth getting philosophical about. Honestly, one of the greatest rock and metal albums released ever. Thing is, at the end of Thing Beyond Things, the album actually ends with Devin genuinely showing what his voice can do and screaming his head off. I think it's for about 9 or 10 seconds, possibly longer, this absolutely blood-curdling, throat-ripping scream. By this point, I was deep into this dream state, and the scream, it scared the shit out of me. At the time, not gonna lie, I was like, and jumped up out of my bed, and was very confused as to what was happening, and then I realised it was on the CD. Nicely played, Devin. Nicely played. I didn't get to see Devin play for quite a while after that. In fact, he was touring with Strapping Young Lad in support of the Strapping Young Lad live album, No Sleep Till Bedtime. So he was there with Byron Stroud and Jed and Gene Hoglan. Oh, yes. And I saw the tour dates coming to Sheffield, where I'm from. I thought, brilliant, it's going to be a gig at Corporation, Sheffield Corporation. The city's premier, well, the city's only rock venue. Dedicated rock and metal venue. It's not dedicated rock and metal venue now, folks. Long way from it. Yes, I get it. You know, they sold out. They needed to stay open, and I totally get that. But it's not a place for me anymore. But anyway, this gig had come up. I'm like, right, I need this in my life. I need to be at this show. And it's one of the strangest shows I've ever been to. Because instead of it being in the main Corporation, which has a really good size to it, great stage, great sound system, it was in a place called The Other Side, which was like a little pre-bar that was tacked onto the side of the original Corporation. And, you know, it held about, I don't know, 100 people or so, had a tiny stage in the corner, of the room, and a bar in it, and it was like being in someone's living room. The opening act on that show was a band called Medulla Nocte, who scared the crap out of me. What a terrifying band to watch live. The singer was absolutely deranged. The guitarist, drummer and bass player were all fantastic and imposing in their own way. But I was quite worried that the vocalist in Medulla Nocte was going to literally dive into the crowd and tear us all limb from limb, then rearrange the limbs in his own fashion. But anyway, during that opening set, the crowd was stood well back, understandably, from the psychopath that was swinging the microphone round and going generally crazy. But that carried on until Strapping came on. So there's Devin Townsend, there's the whole band, kicking into some full-on Strapping Young Lad material. If you know about Strapping Young Lad, you know what that means. That's stuff like All Hail the New Flesh, OMFG, you know, Velvet Kevorkian, the crazy things. Just really, really extreme. And this was done in this tiny, tiny venue with almost no one in it. And maybe I think about 75 people in it, if memory serves me correctly. It possibly doesn't, but that's how I remember it. And it sounded phenomenal, mainly because it was just an enormous wall of noise. But the band looked confused because nobody was in front of the stage. Everyone was a good, like, 8 feet away from the stage. And this was not an age of barriers. There were no barriers. There were no security in there. There was just this void, this, like, almost small swimming pool-sized void where the crowd should have been. So at one point, Devin actually asked people, you know, come here, come here. And he's like, Jesus, I feel like I'm playing in someone's washroom. And that's what it was like. It was like being in a laundrette with a stage in it. It was a really weird atmosphere in there. But I, you know, I got up the guts to go up to the front. And I remember I was wearing a white zombie t-shirt. I was absolutely obsessed with Devin and the music he'd done with Ocean Machine and Strapping Young Lad. And I was aware he was in the middle of finishing up the Infinity albums, and that dates it. So, yeah, I got there down to the front. And, I'm not going to let Devin down. I'm going to do my bit to make this a good night for the band. And I went absolutely berserk in front of the stage. I attempted to match Gene Hoglan's drumming with headbanging. I possibly did myself some lasting damage in trying to do so. I screamed along with Devin at the top of my lungs, trying to forget about the crowd behind me who were probably pointing and laughing at the idiot that was yelling, where there were so few other people down at the front with me. It was crazy. This was a tour where Devin had gone on record at other gigs saying he had a really bad flu. At one point, I ended up with his phlegm on me. So thanks for that, Devin. And when singing along, he knelt down on a monitor and screamed in my face. And I screamed back. So we shared some germs. I was ill for a fortnight after that. Thanks, Devin. I like to think that some of his magnificence rubbed off on me, but it was probably just phlegm. Phlegm. So the gig went on. The gig continued. I carried on basically injuring myself and screaming at the top of my lungs with every lyric. And Gene Hoglan kept his eye on me throughout the whole thing. I remember him, he repeatedly checked on me. At the end of the show, Gene came up and gave me a shattered drumstick, which he had destroyed during the set. And I remember him saying, that's for you, brother, that's for you. And the rest of the band coming to meet me. And I remember the moment I met Devin. And it was just wonderful. I was expecting him to be kind of, not difficult, but kind of anxious. I know he was having some trouble at the time. I know he wasn't in the best frame of mind. But he was warm and friendly and open. He signed my Ocean Machine CD. Oh, I've got ahead of myself a bit here. The set finished up once the Strapping songs had ended with a 3-song set from Ocean Machine to the Seventh Wave. And there was Seventh Wave and Regulator, and I don't remember what the third song was, but I know there was Seventh Wave and Regulator, possibly Hide Nowhere. I think it was Hide Nowhere. And I was in paradise because they sounded amazing. The Strapping Young Lad guys played them note perfect. Devin was on top form, even though he had this horrible phlegmy flu. And it was wonderful. Met him afterwards, and I remember saying, you know, I hope you had a good night, because I'm really kind of embarrassed that it's in this place instead of next door, and, you know, the crowd were kind of standing back. And he appreciated it. We had a laugh and a joke about it, but he was fine about it. That album, it still sticks with me to this day, in the memory of meeting Devin for the first time. I've met him again since then, in 2001, when he did the Physicist album, which is sometimes referred to as Fizzed. When he opened up the Wild Hearts and saw him in Nottingham at Rock City. But it's always going to be that show in 97 in Sheffield at the other side, in the weird venue, in the weird circumstances, catching Devin's flu, getting autographs from Devin and Byron and so on, getting Gene Hoglan's drumstick and being terrified of the opening band. And I've never felt more alive than when I'm at gigs like that. There's something vital and immediate and life-affirming about being drenched in other people's sweat, screaming with people that you don't know. In the case of Devin, I felt like I did know him a bit just from being fascinated by him and loving what he did. I knew him in an artistic sense. I don't know him in a personal sense. You know, you can't really know an artist in a personal sense. Even now, in an age of social media and us being involved with people's lives in such a manner, you can't really know these people, but you can enjoy what they do. And Ocean Machine is something that I still to this day enjoy thoroughly. I have followed his career ever since then, and I've been there for every album along the way, and I just love what the guy does. I think it's fascinating. It's different to what anyone else does. I mean, who else would come out with an album like Ziltoid the Omniscient about the, you know, dreadlock tentacle-headed alien fighting farting ball sacks? Yes. Seriously, look up Ziltoid the Omniscient. You'll be grateful you did. But yes, Ocean Machine. The Biomech album from Ocean Machine by Devin Townsend. One of the greatest things I've ever heard, and one of the greatest things I believe I will ever hear. So that's it for this episode of Andrew Horn's Rock Revival. Thank you for sticking with me while I wax lyrical about one of the greatest things ever laid down on a recording. And thank you, Devin, for being open and warm with weirdos like me when we've met you. I really appreciate it, dude. I really appreciate the stuff you've done and that you continue to do. Please keep on being so weird. It's marvelous. And it gives hope to weirdos like me that we're not alone. Thank you for listening. I've been Andrew Horn. This is my Rock Revival.